I can follow you on foot. You must get Nadia and Jesmay out of the castle. We'll do it, Kyair, Graykin growled, and seemed to increase in physical size instantly, while Runeer moved back in the suite to a bookshelf and pried at the edges. I saw you die, Kyair, Beltor whispered through pale lips. Everyone paused their movements and turned to me. You are mistaken, Duke. I am alive here now. I smiled and listened down the hall. It sounded like a dozen sets of feet. Maybe I would get lucky, and it would only be servants. I know what I saw, man. That woman cut your... Kyair, a voice I recognized, screamed down the south hallway and interrupted Beltor. Get Jesmay. Bar the door. I looked to Nadia, and she nodded. Be safe, she said. Her brown eyes met mine, and I wished the moment could have lasted forever. Instead, I grabbed the door and slammed it shut. Then I turned down the hall and began to walk toward the voice that had called my name. I thought I picked up your scent in the castle. I should have known that Fahalda was full of shit. Islata was flanked by 10 guards who all wore Alatorix's colors. Her golden hair was tied in the usual thick braid. Today it was laced with green ribbons and lavender blooms. You found me. I continued to walk toward her and tried to fight the worry gnawing into my stomach. Islata was no fool, and she must have known why I was here and in this hallway. Untie your sword belt and drop your weapon. The Empress will wish to speak with you. Islata smiled slightly, and then her eyes shifted past me down the hall. We were still a few hundred yards from the doorway to Nadia's room, but I was sure Islata could see the pool of blood on the ground and painted on the side of the wall. She must have wondered where her 4 guards were. I didn't see her make a gesture, but the elven warriors behind her drew their weapons. Swords were made to kill, and the sound of them escaping their scabbards was a song of death. I stood 50 yards from Islata. It was a distance I could cover quickly, but the odds of me surviving a charge against 11 armed warriors who had their blades ready and knew what I was capable of were low. I won't ask again, O'Barney. Disarm. Now. Islata's green eyes seemed to turn golden in the torchlight. I heard the ever fainter whispers of my friends as they retreated through the tunnels away from us. I didn't know for sure how well the elvens could hear, but I hoped that Islata didn't realize that the prisoners were escaping. No, I said. The words came out of my mouth with regret. It was not the time to muse on my feelings for the psychopathic elven, but there was no denying the connection we had developed during our countless nights of sex and conversation. I did not want to kill her. She stared back for a few seconds, face cold and impassive and beautiful. She could not tolerate my refusal in front of her warriors. I suspected if it were not for the fear she wielded through her violent and erratic behavior, many of them would have already questioned our relationship and her loyalty to the elvens. One of us would have to die tonight, unless she could figure out a way to retreat without looking weak. "Kill him," she said softly. It was hardly a whisper, but was filled with more remorse than I had expected. Her guards sprang forward like rabid wolves, hungry for the kill that had taunted them for too long. So be it.
Chapter 24. Jesmay. I paced my room after Talaxfi left, my mind a whirl with thoughts too agitated to be contained in an immobile body. It was a relief to have something to think about besides Kyair's death. The story the Empress had told me was too fantastic to be real. Though, sometimes the truth was harder to believe than the fantasies we created to protect ourselves from the pain of reality. A soft knock sounded on my door, and I paused. Perhaps my mind had been so wrapped up in my thoughts that I had created the noise out of some deep desire for company. The knock sounded again, and I moved toward the oak door and opened it. "Good evening, Princess." An elven woman wearing a green uniform with gold embroidery of trees and flowers stood in the hall. Her skin was a few shades grayer than snow white, while her hair was a darker ash. Her eyes sparkled like red rubies. They were the kind of eyes that would have made me think the woman was a monster had she not possessed such an alien beauty. It almost looked as if an artist had carved her out of granite and affixed the precious stones on her face just to give her some sort of color. "The Empress sent me to keep you company. It is close to midnight, but I heard you walking in your room." The woman's mouth curled into a slight smile, and her beauty seemed to increase dramatically. Her hair was tied together in a loose bunch of braided curls, one of which I noticed was actually colored a red darker than her eyes. I realized I had been staring at the woman for longer than was polite, and felt my cheeks begin to burn. "I was just thinking," I replied.
"I pace when I am deep in thought as well. What were you thinking about?"
She tilted her head slightly, and her long braids fell to one side of her face. "It doesn't matter," I said, maybe a little too quickly. I knew that by requesting an escort around the castle, I would gain a bit of freedom, but it would saddle me with someone always watching what I was doing and trying to pry into my mind. It was worth the hassle until I could get a feel for what was actually going on in my home.
"Do you wish for food? Drink?"
The woman's smile disappeared, and I guessed that she wasn't used to being pleasant. "I am fine," I said, looking back over my shoulder. I had kept the fire burning brightly, along with several oil lamps. On the oak table were two pitchers of water and half a bottle of wine that I hadn't touched since the Empress left 15 minutes ago.
"Well, I could eat, and would prefer someone to join me. We can walk to your main kitchen and then make the journey back. Perhaps the stroll and conversation with me will help you relax."
I debated telling her no, but realized that I might as well take advantage of the request I had made earlier. I did want to see the castle. Besides, I really was having problems sleeping, and a bit of exercise would no doubt help my mind relax. "I would enjoy that." I smiled and then looked down at my clothes. I was wearing a light wool slip, and it would be unseemly for anyone to see me dressed as such outside of my room. "Can I change quickly?"
"Of course."
The gray woman nodded and stepped inside of my suite when I gestured for her to enter. I walked to the other side of the main room and opened the door to my bedroom. Then I moved to my dresser and slid open the wood doors to reveal my abundant collection of dresses. When the woman who had killed Kair returned me here, I had been surprised to find my quarters as I had left them. I would have thought that the Loshers would have pillaged every square inch of the castle and burned whatever they couldn't haul away. Most of the dresses required various sets of hands to help button, tie, braid, or otherwise fashion to my body, but there were a few I could manage by myself. I selected one, a smooth satin dress with a shorter cut at the legs. It was more of a spring dinner piece, but the garment was modest and easy to walk in. I hadn't heard the footsteps of the woman follow me into my room, but I still stepped behind my vanity screen to take off my nightgown and slip on the new dress.
"That dress is pretty. It matches your eyes,"
the elven said after I walked out of my room. "Thank you. It was always nice to be complimented, but I doubted she really cared."
"You should brush your hair, though."
She raised a finger to point to my blonde mane. I hadn't bothered to look into a mirror after I put the dress on, and now that I thought about it, I didn't remember the last time I had even glanced in one. I returned to my bedroom and approached the mirror cautiously, afraid to see how awful I looked. My face was thin, and the blue of my irises was bright against my bloodshot eyes and the dark circles that rimmed them. My hair was a nest of hay tumbling down my back, and I realized with embarrassment that I had dined with the Empress in this state. My mother would have been horrified. She always chided me about making a good impression, that keeping my appearance neat and pretty was not just good manners, but my duty as a representative of Naya. I sighed and vowed I would present myself in a more appropriate way the next time I saw the Empress, and make my apologies for how I looked tonight. I ran my fingers through my matted hair. It would have taken my handmaidens an hour to sort through the tangles and arrange it properly.
I could not keep the elven woman waiting, so I did my best to quickly smooth it down and pin it up into something a little more presentable. "What is your name?" I asked after I returned to the gray elven. "Viernine. Pleasure to meet you." I curtsied, and she bowed slightly. She gestured to the door and closed it behind us. The two guards in the hallway nodded as we passed, but did not question where Viernine was taking me. Perhaps they had already discussed it, or maybe she outranked them and they were not supposed to question her. "They have different colored uniforms than you do." I should have said it as a question, but the words came out as a statement, a stupid and obvious statement. "They are in a different army." "The Empress has different armies?" I had never paid much attention to any of the war talk my father engaged in, but I knew that Naya only had one army.
"The Empress has 5 different generals. Each controls their own army."
"Which army are you in?"
"If there were multiple armies with their own generals, perhaps I could find an ally in one of them." "I report directly to the Empress. I am a commander in her elite guards."
"But the other armies know who you are? You work together?" I tried not to sound like I was digging for information, but I suppose the Telaxthi wouldn't have sent Viernine if she thought I would be able to manipulate her.
"My green kit shows that I am with the Empress."
She gestured to her uniform with some pride.
"But I know the guards posted at your door. I was with the Blue General when he seized your castle. We have been comrades for years now."
"Who is the Blue General?"
"Ella Torrecht. You may not meet him for some time. Your interactions will be with the Empress or myself."
We walked in silence for the next few minutes, until we reached the foyer of the royal wing. I descended the marble stairs, but after a few steps I noticed that Viernine wasn't accompanying me. I turned up the banister and saw the Ashwoman sniffing the air slightly as if she had caught the scent of a dessert baking and was trying to determine the location of its oven. "Are you okay?" Kaya had spoken about his heightened senses, but he had not mentioned these elvens sharing similar traits.
"I am fine. Let us continue."
Viernine looked the exact opposite of what she said. I considered asking her what she smelled, but as she was clearly intent on lying to me about it, I did not bother. There were 5 elven guardsmen in the foyer, all dressed in blue. The group looked somewhat agitated. They had their hands on their weapon grips and moved to the bottom of the stairs as we descended.
"Hail, Viernine."
The man in the front had bronze-colored hair shaved close to his skull.
"Did you see Islata?"
"No."
Viernine stuck her tongue out and licked her lips quickly. "How long ago did she pass through here?"
"Not 5 minutes. She asked us not to let any humans leave this wing until she returned."
The man turned his attention to me.
"She was accompanied by your warriors."
"Yes."
The man nodded, and the other guards behind him mirrored his movement. They seemed agitated.
"Her saber squad."
"I am sure they can handle whatever disturbance is afoot. You should obey her orders and detain any humans attempting to leave. The princess and I are on our way to the kitchen. We will return shortly."
Viernine's voice never fluctuated. Something was going on in the castle, but she seemed completely indifferent. I suppose that Talaxthi had ordered her to attend to me, and she was giving that task her undivided focus.
"Very well."
The guards hesitated for a few seconds, but apparently Viernine had not lied earlier when she had spoken about her connection to the Empress. The warriors stepped to the side of the stairway and allowed us to pass, with no further words about my race. "Who is Islata?" I asked after we had left the foyer for the southbound hallway toward the center of the castle.
"Alatoric's primary commander and trainer for his army."
"Is there something amiss in the castle?" I asked the obvious question.
"Perhaps." The woman turned to me. "If you believe in spirits or ghosts."
Her lips parted in a slight smile. She wasn't used to smiling. "I do believe in spirits," I said.
"Oh? Tell me more."
"When the people we love die, they often come back to watch over us. They do their best to aid the living. It brings them peace in the afterlife." I was giving her the short version. I could have spoken about the specifics of prayer and such for hours, but I suspected she may have been sarcastically asking me about my faith. Then again, I could not tell if this Ashkind Elven even knew what sarcasm was. Her voice was so devoid of emotion.
Did you love the O'Barney man, who called himself Kyaer?
Yes, I said softly, remembering his lips on mine, his scent, his smile. Everything came crashing into me like a wave against the beach.
He is dead. You saw him die.
Her words were an arrow through my heart. The world spun and dove. I slowed my walk and tried to concentrate on not crying. I thought I was past this, but this strange woman pried loose the memory of Kyaer's head rolling on the ground. Yes. My eyes watered, and I didn't say the word as much as choke it out. I wanted to go back to my room now. I wanted to be alone and mourn until my body left this world and joined his. But I needed to focus on Virnine and the walk to the kitchen. I didn't want her to think I was some stupid love-struck girl. Then again, perhaps it would be better if they underestimated me.
Perhaps he is here, watching over you.
The woman put a hand on my shoulder and gave a gentle squeeze. Her eyes seemed to glow evilly in the torchlight while her mouth displayed perfectly white teeth, but the smile was friendly, and her expression sympathetic and sincere instead of malicious. I hope so. I sniffed and patted the edge of my dress sleeve against the corner of my eye.
He was an interesting one, your Kyaer.
You knew him? I turned to the woman and tried not to seem surprised. I knew that Kyaer was held captive by the Empress, but I didn't know how much contact he had with her people.
Yes, I knew him better than most of my people know his kind.
She smiled cryptically.
My people have a saying in our ancient language. The most certain determines the outcome.
The most certain, I repeated, and tried to wrap my mind around the concept without her explaining it further. After half a minute, I gave up and asked her to explain what she meant.
If there are two warriors facing each other in a duel, the one who is most certain of victory will triumph. If two groups are engaged in a political debate, the one that is most certain they are right will win. This is why one must be extensively trained in any discipline they practice. You must have confidence in your ability and enough knowledge to achieve success.
I think I understand. When I first learned to dance, I felt clumsy and could not perform the movements correctly. After enough practice, I had more confidence, and I was certain I would do well at balls. I winced inside at my words. It was a reply I would have given a year ago, perhaps, but I had changed. I didn't care about dancing anymore, or Virnine's philosophy. But I needed her to think that I did. I wanted her to think of me as a vapid princess with nothing on her mind but love, dancing, and parties.
Did you dance well because of the practice, or because the practice made you confident?
Virnine smiled a bit at her question. The practice made me certain I would do well. I had repeated the movements hundreds, maybe thousands of times. I couldn't have been successful without the practice.
Perhaps you are correct. But one day you will have to do something you have never done, and you will be so certain of your success that your mind shall create the outcome you wish for.
Maybe.
No maybes. Only certainty.
She smiled at me again. I laughed at her point and shook my head. I like you, Virnine, I said sincerely. The elven was emotionless, but she didn't seem dangerous, just mildly bored with babysitting me.
I like you too, Princess. I liked your friend as well. I bring up the certainty because he was the prime essence of that saying. He seemed to have no doubt in his mind that he was the actual Kyaer. Even when we had him detained in our camp, completely at our mercy, he treated the situation as if he could crush us at any time. It was annoying, yet charming.
She smirked, and I realized that the woman did have facial expressions. They were just very slight. He frustrated my brother as well. Once Kyaer and I were having lunch, and Nanas interrupted us. Kyaer didn't appreciate the way my brother spoke to me, and threw him in the creek. The memory made me want to giggle and cry at the same time.
That sounds like something he would do, Virnine said.
Here,
We had reached the set of stairs that led down into the main kitchen. I had been here a few times in my life, mostly when I was a young girl and spent my days chasing Nadia, Nanos, and Runeer around the castle. They would duck into the kitchen to steal treats or food, and I would often get caught attempting to mirror their capers. The sound of thunder suddenly rang through the halls as if a storm cloud found itself inside of the castle. Virnine and I stopped at the bottom of the stairs and looked up to the ceiling. It was hard to tell where the noise had come from, but it had definitely not originated in the kitchen. What was that? I tried not to sound afraid, but I probably failed.
Nothing that can't wait until after we eat.
She shrugged nonchalantly and pushed open one side of the double-swinging doors. I followed her into the kitchen and was surprised to see only elvens in the room. They were wearing servants' clothes, but in the Empress's shade of green instead of traditional Naya purple. "Where are the human servants?" I asked.
"They are in the West Wing's kitchen. The Empress wanted her staff in the main kitchen until she had a chance to work out responsibilities with you and your family."
The atmosphere in the room seemed tense, and the gathered elvens looked very relieved to see my escort.
"Can you put together a meal for us?"
Virnine addressed a black-haired woman with eyes that looked like an animal's.
"Of course, Virnine. Do you or your human have a preference?"
There was another loud sound of thunder, and a few of the elvens in the room gasped in complete surprise. The cook's face went a few shades whiter.
"Whatever is fresh."
The woman with ruby eyes completely ignored the sound and the obvious fear around her. I had to admit that her indifference to the noise made me wonder why the cooks and servants were so skittish. Elvens were so much stronger than humans. What could they have to fear?
"I gave the other two humans some fish and vegetables. I can prepare the same for you and yours."
The cook's big eyes darted back and forth between the two of us.
"There were two humans in this kitchen?"
Virnine asked. "Males, about 3/4 of an hour ago. Just some servants delivering food to the Duchess or a princess or something like that."
"What did they look like?"
Virnine seemed interested, or at least one of her gray eyebrows rose slightly.
"Don't they all look the same?"
The woman laughed and then cut short when she realized that Virnine either didn't get her joke or didn't seem to care. "One had a dash of hair in between his nose and mouth. The other was much thinner."
"The thin human. What color were his eyes and hair?"
"His hair was dark brown. I don't recall his eye color." She turned over her shoulder and yelled something unintelligible to the men behind her, who promptly buttered an iron pan and began rummaging through cabinets. "We'll be done in 1/4..." Another boom, more like a series of rumbles, sounded distantly in the castle. This time the plates on the shelves rattled, and the chandelier on the ceiling swung slightly.
"What is going on?"
All pretense of calm vanished among the cooks, and they joined the woman at the table to beg Virnine for answers.
"Probably nothing. You should go about your duties until instructed otherwise."
Almost as soon as Virnine finished her words, the castle alarm bell rang. It was a horribly loud device, connecting almost 200 flat gongs, large chimes, and cup-shaped bronze bells to ring all at once across the massive castle. I was somewhat used to the noise, as it was tradition to use it on the turn of the new year to test the device, but I had only ever heard it ring once before as an actual alarm, just a few minutes before I was kidnapped. The alarm I remembered was almost ear-splitting, but someone must have damped a few of the more aggressive bells. I could still hear the ring, and it was still loud, but it was less painful now.
"Apparently, it is far from nothing."
Virnine smiled.
"You should all exit through the servants' doors and stay in your rooms until the alarm stops."
The elvens gathered in the kitchen seemed relieved to be given orders. I turned to watch their swift retreat and marveled at how quick and graceful their movements were. When they left, I turned back to the gray woman. "What about us?" I tried not to let my nervousness show. My red-eyed escort still seemed completely at ease with the situation. I wondered who could attack the elvens in our castle. Another group of Kenneth's clansmen? Maybe they had come to our world looking for him and were exacting revenge.
"I'm still hungry."
Virnine flowed around the table and opened a salt chest. She pulled a few fish from the container, checked to see that they had been prepped and cleaned, and threw them on the heated iron pan with little ceremony. Then she grabbed a stack of green leafy vegetables and diced them.
Grab a bottle of white from the cellar, please. She pointed off to her right with the knife. I was thankful for the task. It would keep my mind off of the thought of hundreds of tattooed O'Barney warriors running through the halls of my castle, killing everything in their path. I opened the door to the kitchen's massive pantry, descended the long stairs to the ample wine cellar, and combed the shelves for a suitable bottle. It took me a few minutes to find one. It came from the hills just above Reliot. Ironically, the grapes would pair well with the fish. I was only in the cellar for a few minutes at the most, just long enough for the alarm to sound again, but when I returned to the kitchen, Virnine was gone. The fish still sizzled in the pans, and she had added the cut greens to another skillet, covering the vegetables with butter and salt. I thought she might have walked to the other side of the kitchen, but a quick glance around the room revealed that I was alone. Then I saw the blood. It pooled beneath the double doors like a shiny rug. It was shaped so perfectly, with crisp, clean borders, that I almost didn't recognize it for what it was. Virnine? I called out. The sound of my voice seemed to echo off the empty walls. The thought of walking across all the blood brought my terrorized heart to a stampede. But the idea of just staying here, waiting for the raiders to come and kill me, made me even more afraid. Where would I even go? I couldn't return to my room. I couldn't stay here. I turned to the stove and flipped the cuts of fish in the pan. There was a jar of salt, and I took a few pinches and sprinkled it over the food. One side had been seared black. It was still edible, but probably had lost most of its taste. I flipped the greens in the other pan. The day had turned bright jade and only needed another minute or so. My hands were shaking, but I still managed to get the cork out of the wine and poured two glasses. Virnine would return shortly. I took a few sips of the wine while the alarm smashed into my eardrums again. I leaned my head back to gulp the remainder of my glass. It was sour and needed time to air, but the warm burn of alcohol on my throat calmed me a bit, so I immediately poured myself another glass and turned my attention back to the food. Virnine would still be hungry when she came back. I found two plates on the shelves above the stove and dished out the fish and greens. Then I cut up a few slices of bread from a freshly baked loaf and found some flatware. Virnine would be back any minute, but to keep her plate warm, I covered it with an iron lid from one of the pans. I ate a careful bite of fish and tried to ignore my trembling hands. Then I took a bite of the cooked vegetables and a sip of wine. I wasn't hungry. The food tasted like ash in my mouth, but it was something to do until Virnine returned. I stopped with my fork in the air when screams ripped through the hall outside the door. A few seconds after the initial screech of pain, I heard shouting and the clash of steel on steel. There was a battle close to the entrance of the kitchen, maybe just right outside the doors. I ducked behind the counter, wrapped my arms around myself, and tried to decide what I should do. Virnine wasn't here. She was probably dead by now, and I was a fool to depend on her for protection. I couldn't leave by the main door. I could run through the servants' door, but if the castle was really under attack, there would be O'Barney waiting for me there. They would kill me. I stopped and smiled. The O'Barney would not kill me. I was a human, not an elven. Though I told the Empress I would work with her, this was simply to facilitate my eventual revenge. I was not siding with the elvens. Kyaer would have told me not to. I wanted and needed the O'Barney to wipe my country clean of the elven scourge. I wanted them all to die for the murder of my father, Kyaer, and my countrymen. I steeled myself in determination and prepared to stand and walk through the door like I owned the castle. This was my castle, after all. These alarm bells were mine. I heard the door open after the bells chimed again, and all confident thoughts and bravado fled from my mind. Wet-sounding footsteps echoed in the large room, causing my stomach to flip and my breathing to come out like a horse's. I prayed to Grandmother that whoever was in the kitchen wouldn't bother to look past the counter. I prayed to my father that they would turn around and walk back out through the doors.
"Jess,"
a voice from the grave said. My breath froze and my mind twisted with shock. I had never believed I would hear that voice again, but I would recognize it forever. It was impossible that Kyaer was here. I didn't want to look over the counter.
I feared seeing his spirit as much as I feared seeing an empty room. Either way, it meant I had gone insane.
It's me. You have to get out of the castle.
The footsteps grew closer, and I shivered uncontrollably. I thought about his head rolling on the ground. I remembered how much I had screamed and how much my heart ached. It was too soon to see his spirit, even if it was here to help keep me safe. No. Leave me alone, I hardly whispered.
Go to him.
Another voice urged me. It was a voice more familiar than Kyer's, and it made me move without question off of my knees. I pulled myself up to look at the man who had spoken to me. He was covered in blood, almost as if he had been swimming in it. He had swords in each of his hands, but the one on his right was cracked and broken off halfway. It looked like he had been through demon's teeth and spit out again, but he looked alive.
How do you get to the dungeons from here?
His voice was urgent. My mind wouldn't give me the answers to his question. I wanted to ask him how he was standing here, covered in blood, when I had seen his head cut from his shoulders a few days ago.
Jess!
He was suddenly standing behind the counter and shaking me. His hand on my shoulder felt real, but I still couldn't believe he was alive. The broken sword lay on the counter next to me. The blade was not only severed, but the edge was so abused it looked more like a saw than a sword. How are you here? I managed to gasp. I felt that even saying those words took all of my strength.
Danor and I came through the sewers and dungeon. Nadia, Runeer, Beltor, and Graykin are waiting for us. We have to leave now.
He tugged at my arm, and I followed him out from behind the counter.
Can we get there through these doors?
He pointed to the smaller set of doors that the servants used, and I nodded. Then we were running through the servants' quarters, cutting through rooms, dashing through hallways, and pausing every so often so that Kyer could listen for our pursuers. My legs and lungs burned. I wanted to ask him again how he was still alive, but I couldn't mouth the words and put life to them. Or maybe I was afraid that if I asked him again, he would disappear and I would wake from this dream.
Wait here.
He pulled me into an empty room and whispered softly in my ear. I felt the warmth of his lips and smelled the pleasant scent of his breath. I crouched as well as I could in my dress, and he darted out the door. The alarm bells rang as soon as he left my sight, but he returned before they were done ringing and pulled me into the corridor. The hallway was decorated with dozens of beheaded elven servants. I tripped over one, and Kyer prevented me from falling, but then I slipped on the pooled blood the corpses had left, and he had to steady me again. The air reeked of blood, feces, and death. I gagged and forced my free hand to my mouth to stifle the reaction. We finally reached a door that had led out of the castle.
I can hear the guards behind us. Hurry!
He pushed open the door to the courtyard and pulled me with him. It was a good distance across the courtyard to the door of the dungeon. Alta hung full and illuminated the empty field with a grayish light, but Yaha was at half wane and added a slight yellow tint. If the rest of my family really waited in the dungeon, they were agonizingly close. Was this a dream?
Let's go.
Kyer closed the thick oak door and led me across the courtyard. I tried my best to follow him, but he moved so fast and my body just couldn't seem to get enough air. Then he slowed his run and walked a few steps before stopping.
Fuck.
He reached his right arm out and circled it around my waist, pulling me to his back. I peered out from behind him. Dozens of elvens rose from the bushes on the far side of the courtyard.
I knew you would come for the princess,
a voice called out from behind us. I turned to see more elven archers. The voice came from Virnine, and she walked next to the empress and a feminine-looking man with long silver hair. He wore a blue and gold silk robe that had various moons and stars embroidered into the fine fabric.
Fuck,
Kyer whispered with seething anger.
Cast aside your sword, please,
the man said with a mocking smile.
No,
my lover grunted, and the alarm bells rang again, like the castle was punctuating a statement.
Don't be stupid, Kyer. There are over 60 bows aimed at you.
Frustration was prevalent in Birnine's voice.
I do not wish to injure Jesme. Let her come to me, the Empress said and beckoned to me with her hand.
No, she'll stay with me.
Kyaer growled. My head spun. This must be a nightmare. I'd wake up any second and be back in my bed, or maybe I was still in the cave where Kyaer and I had spent so many nights as lovers. I'd come to my senses in his arms and we would make love again. I'd forget all about this dream and just be with him.
We have your other friends as well, the man with the blue robe said.
At his word, the door to the dungeon opened and more elven soldiers emerged. They dragged Greykin Runeir. The small village of Meriam was home to 150 families, mostly small dairy and cattle farmers. It's enough to require 2 elven warriors to haul him into the courtyard.
Where are Nadia and the Duke?
Kyaer growled. They are safe somewhere else. The Empress smiled and tilted her head sympathetically. Jesme, come here, please. Talaxi held out her right hand to me, and something in her voice almost made me want to obey her. But I turned to look at Kyaer instead. His face was a combination of anger, frustration, and fear. I had never seen him afraid.
There is only one way out of this, Kyaer. Just do what we say, and no one else has to be hurt.
Furnine's voice was urgent and maybe a little pleading. I had only known the woman for an hour, but it seemed unusual for her to beg. It was too much emotion for her.
What are your terms?
Kyaer asked at last.
Drop your sword, and we will talk terms, the man said. No.
You have no leverage in this situation, unless you wish to kill Jesme, the Empress said with a shake of her head. Just throw your sword a fair distance away, and we can speak peacefully.
They need you for something,
Kyaer whispered to me. We know you will not kill her.
I want to talk terms first,
Kyaer insisted again. He pulled me a bit closer with his right hand, and I could smell the coppery blood on him.
It killed the one at the end.
The man pointed at Knight Captain Denor. The elven soldier yanked on the mustached man's hair to expose his throat, and then he moved his sword to slash.
Wait!
Kyaer screamed. The elven stopped and turned to look at Talaxi for instructions. Kyaer tossed his sword into the grass and sighed in defeat.
Wise decision, Virnine smiled.
Come over here, Jesme, the Empress demanded again. Her voice was still soothing and warm, but beneath the sweetness I detected her desperation. Kyaer was right. She did need me.
No.
Kyaer's grip tightened slightly on my shoulder. He did not need to hold me back. I would not leave him.
I threw aside my sword. What are your terms?
My terms? The Empress raised an eyebrow in mockery. When my sister said she killed you, I was quite angry. I still believed you had information I needed. But now I know you are a liar, just like the rest of your kind. You take no responsibility with the power you possess. I gave you ample opportunity for fair treatment, and you spit every offer back in my face with callousness and disrespect. You butchered my kin in my own home. So here are my terms, Kyaer. She spat his name with obvious contempt.
Get off my world, or you will be destroyed.
She did kill him, I screamed. I didn't even realize I had spoken the words until they had left my mouth. Kyaer surrendered. Then she cut off his head anyway. I saw it all happen. I felt warm tears run down my cheeks. I saw him die. Silence permeated the courtyard. No one spoke for a few seconds, and even the castle's alarm bells remained silent. The elvens all looked shocked by my outburst.
What do you mean, Jesme?
Kyaer asked. She said that you could move under her magic. Then she cut off your head. It rolled onto the ground at my feet. You died. I saw it. I gasped through my sobs and kneeled down.
They couldn't kill me, a voice said.
It came from where Kyaer was standing, but it didn't sound like him. His face looked empty, as if he was daydreaming or asleep with his eyes opened.
They killed her. Then they tried to kill me. They tried again and again, but I couldn't die.
Who are you talking about? The Empress's question was mixed with frustration.
My generals. They killed Iorathi.
He screamed so loud that my head filled with his voice.
It echoed so much in my skull that it sounded like hundreds of men were repeating what he said.
But they could not kill me.
Screams filled the courtyard, and I saw the other elvens drop their bows and hold their hands to their ears. My brain felt like the inside of one of the large alarm bells. I looked up to Kyair. I also screamed. Instead of Kyair, there was a monster. It was twice the size of the man it had consumed. Its skin was a dull black. Screaming faces with the flesh torn from their skulls were etched across every surface of its exoskeleton. Each tiny face seemed more horrified than the one beside it. The head of the monster was a horn, toothy skull that smiled wickedly and screamed at the same time. The creature held a shield in one hand and a massive metal club in the other. The mace looked like it could eat the soul of whatever it touched and add its victim's face to all the others emblazoned across its body. "By the dead gods!" the Empress cried out into the night. "The Destroyer!" It was a scream of absolute terror, and it was echoed by every elven warrior crouched in the courtyard. The creature tilted the gaping maw of its head to look down at me. Eyes glowed green through the scaled plates of metal. I crawled backward as fast as I could in my dress, but my legs got caught up in the folds and I couldn't move. Almost as soon as the demon had laid eyes on me, it lost interest. The monster turned to where Graykin, Runeir, and Denor kneeled on the grass and made a low growling noise. Then it was suddenly standing next to them, and the elven's bodies evaporated into a red mist that hung in the air. I heard the twang of bows, but the nightmarish demon had already raised its shield lazily and moved it from side to side, while dozens of arrows smashed into it like high-pitched raindrops. When the first volley ended, a wave of heat passed over me. The sky flashed with purple and green light, and the screaming behind me reached a feverish pitch. I risked a glance back and saw men and women encased in sticky, liquid fire that seemed to only grow stronger with their efforts to roll on the ground and deny it of air. A strong arm picked me up and I was flung on a shoulder. The monster was attacking the elvens, or so it seemed, but the creature's movements were too quick and terrible for me to follow. I was jostled. Something smacked my head and I felt everything grow dark. "Jess, wake up." It was Nadia's voice. She sounded far away, but my eyes focused on her face. "Where are we?" I tried to say, but my ears were still ringing and I could not hear my own voice. "She's awake. Let's go," my cousin commanded. Hands hauled me to my feet and someone asked me if I could walk. Beltor grabbed my hand and the group of us jogged through the halls of the prison. Runeir and Denor seemed to know the way. The two men led the group down uncountable floors, through the reeking sewage tunnels, and finally to horses. I kept wanting to wake up, to be free of this nightmare, to be with Kyair.
"Where are we going?"
Beltor asked while he and Graykin helped me mount a horse.
"To your keep,"
Denor said with urgency.
"Aren't the Losher there?"
my uncle asked.
"Scouts say that they pillaged the farmland and then went back over the teeth,"
Denor stated.
"Aren't we just delaying the inevitable? I want a chance to kill me some more of these motherfuckers, but how are we going to win?"
Graykin's skin was flushed and looked almost ghastly in the light of the torch.
"Kyair said he will teach us."
Denor shrugged.
"What if he doesn't get out?"
Runeir asked with concern. We had all mounted our horses now, and Denor led the way through a thick oak grove.
"He'll get out. But he said Nadia also knows how to do it,"
Denor whispered. "He showed me once, but I'm going to have a hard time remembering," Nadia hissed. I was so happy to see my cousin, but there was no mistaking the anger on her face.
"Then hopefully he joins us later,"
Denor laughed a little. "What if that monster kills him?" I asked.
"Monster?"
Nadia said.
"Just don't talk about it anymore,"
Runeir said.
"We've got enough to worry about. Nadia will tell you later."
"Their ears can hear us. Be quiet," Denor commanded. We rode in nervous silence until we emerged from the oak forest and into the plains that surrounded the capital. I could see a faint green and purple glow from the distant castle.
Although my eyes weren't as sharp as Kyair's, it seemed that warriors were entering the city like a stream of angry ants carrying torches. Then we turned northeast, toward Nadia's home, away from the castle, away from the Empress and her promises, away from the horrible demon monster, and away from Kyair. Into the endless night.
This concludes The Destroyer, Book 3, by Michael Scott Earle. Narrated by Kevin T. Collins and Exie Sands. Copyright 2016 by Michael Scott Earle. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Michael Scott Earle and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.